If I can remind everyone to take the opportunity to increase your chelik in olam haba by filling out the little piece of paper for which you can volunteer to learn with one of the novices in the yeshiva, one of the new students, and it could be nice if it were weekly, every week, daily, whatever you can, it'll be a big schus for you. It's my pleasure to announce the next speaker, a dear colleague and Talmid Chacham Otzem, who also is a tremendous onov, and it's been my pleasure to be able to work with him for the last couple of years since he retired from being a professor of law at Maryland State University. Is that correct? And a rav in a shul in Maryland, and he honored us with joining the staff at Or Sameach, Rabbi Yitzchak Breidowitz.
Everyone, I noticed Rabbi Lazarus used the word retired, and sometimes indeed people in the States ask me how I enjoy my retirement, and for various reasons that's a bit of a misstatement. We're of course in the day of Shivas Rabbi Tamas, the 18th of Tamas. We're already well within the idea of the 3 weeks. And there's an interesting thought that Rav Tzadok says, based on the Haftiris of the 3 weeks, the first of which will be this coming Shabbos. And that is, each of the Haftiris begins with a different thing that we're supposed to rectify. The first Haftira begins Divrei Yirmiyahu, the words of Yirmiyahu, first parak of Yirmiyahu, and that deals with the tikkun, the rectification of the Kayach HaDibor, to speak right, not to speak Lashon Hara, not to be Mavaza people, Nivol Peh. The second Haftira is Shimu Devar Hashem, being Mesakein our Shmia, what we hear. And the third Haftira, right before Tisha B'Av, is Chazayin Yeshayahu, the vision of Yeshayahu, which is what we see. Dibor Shmia Re'ia. And that's a very, very interesting progression. Because what it suggests is, in our relationship of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, we first start externally. We learn how not to say bad things, not to put people down. Even if in our hearts we look at people askance, we initially control ourselves. We learn how not to use speech in a negative way. But eventually you have to move beyond externalities. And one has to change the fundamental attitudes that are within a person. How we look at our fellow Jew in terms of not allowing ourselves to hear negative things, but more importantly, ultimately, to change our perception. Chazon is not just visual acuity. Chazon refers to how we perceive reality, how we understand reality. And that's very, very significant. And I think it has a direct relevance in the avoda of Kiruv Rechaikim. I think everyone here understands the imperative of bringing other Jews to Torah. Now, whether it be in the context of a professional kirov operation, whether it be in terms of the hospitality of having people over for Shabbos, whether it's chavrusas, whether it's in terms of saying good morning to Jews who are not religious. Every moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us opportunities to bring people to Torah by our example, by the way we behave. I think we understand, as the Meshech Chachma points out, that one of the casualties of Golus is that one loses a sense of history, where they came from, and one loses a sense of hope, what they can become. And so many of Achenu B'nai Yisrael, our brothers and our sisters, literally have no sense of being B'nai Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, no sense of the history, the glorious history of holiness, the history of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as a result of not knowing where they came from, They have no sense of where to go to. If you don't know where you come from, you don't know where you're supposed to be going. And as a result, as a basic chiyuv of leisamad al dam reyecha, not standing by when somebody's drowning, we have an obligation. So kiruv is rooted in the chiyuvim of bein adam lechaveiro. Chazal say, gadol hamachtiyo yosem in arhargo, he who causes another to sin is more chamor than killing somebody. And if that's so, we're dealing with a matter of pikuach nefesh spiritually. But the Rambam tells us that kiruv rechaikim is not only rooted in my interpersonal duties towards another person, but they are rooted in my avas Hashem. The Rambam says, when he describes the mitzvah of avas Hashem, he says, he who loves God will want to make God's name beloved and sanctified and niskadesh in the eyes of others. And if one does not care to do that, then not only is there a lack of responsibility or feeling towards another person, which is bein adam lechaveiro, but inextricably, there is a lack of avas Hashem as well. Because if you love God, you want to make the Shem Hashem misayev al yadecha. This is why the Chasam Sefer, a very famous Hakdama, points out that of all of the avos, it is only Avram Avinu that is called Avram Ohavi, Avram who loves me. And the Chasam Sefer says, because Avram Avinu could have become a much greater person in some level had he isolated himself from the Rishayim, from the riffraff, had he simply been misbodeid, had he been alone in a cave thinking about Devekas and Hashem. But Avram Avinu, because he loved HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was willing, the Chasam Sefer says, this would be a daring thought for us to express, was willing to give up some of the madregos he achieved in order to make the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu beloved. And thus the Chasam Sefer says, that is emistika mesiras nefesh. Mesiras nefesh, we normally talk about willing to give up your life. He says, no, if I'm willing to give up my physical life, that's mesiras aguf. Mesiras nefesh means a person understands that in the greater scheme of things, I should be willing to give up some of the madregos I might have achieved by myself in order to make the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu misayel val yodecha. You know, they tell the story. The Chazon Ish used to tell the story. The Chazon Ish, for many, many years, till he was in his 50s, was more or less a very isolated individual in Vilna. He wrote some of his great svarim, the Chazon Ish and Aruch Chaim. He was not known by very many people. Some good Rav Chaim Eiser happened to know him. But the Chazon Ish was very much a nister. And the Chazon Ish once went to see the Chafetz Chaim. And the Chafetz Chaim had a certain knack, call it Ruach HaKodesh, that when somebody needed to hear a certain message, that's what the Chafetz Chaim happened to be talking about. B'mikra, as it were, even if he didn't even see the person there. So the story goes that the Chafetz Chaim started talking about the chayva, to be marbitz Torah, to spread Torah, to bring people to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And at one point the Chafetz Chaim said, you know, if I just would have been concerned for my own learning, he says, even I, Yisrael Meir, could have become a Talmud Chacham. He says, even somebody like me. He says, but I decided, as it were, to be Mashpia, to help, Kiddush Hashem. So the Chazon Ish understood that that was a message for him, to be Isaac in the Tzibur, to be Mezakeh as a Rabbim. All of us know the rest of the story. When he came to Eretz Yisrael for the last 20 years of his life, he was the Manek Hador in so many ways. So that there is an acharias to bring Yidden to Torah. And there are many, many ways. Again, I'm not suggesting you have to work for Or Sameach or anything else. There are many, many ways. But it's a clear matter of Leisamad al Dam Reyecha, a matter of Pikuach Nefesh, and a kiyum, of Avas Hashem, as the Rambam says. But what I want to share with you, and again, Baruch Hashem, it could be a lot of what I say you've already heard. On one hand, that's good, because that means that we hear the message over and over again, and it has the haskama of G'daylim V'tayvim Mimeni. And that is, particularly during the 3 weeks, when we know that the Mikdash was Necharav, the Mikdash Sheni was Necharav because of Sinas Chinam, and we can only be Misaken by Avas Yisrael. It's a time to think of Achrayas. And especially since this is a period of time of Tzipia LeGeula, we're looking forward, we're yearning for Geula, and Chazal say, Ein Yisrael Nigalin Ela B'Tshuva, Geula will only come through Tshuva. So this is a Zman in which we think about our Tshuva, and how we could help other Yidden do Tshuva as well. But it's important to also understand that this is a complicated phenomenon. On one level, the so-called professionalization of Jewish outreach has had great, great successes in many ways. We have techniques, we have courses, we have structure, we have answers to difficult questions. Although it's interesting, people always say, you know, someone will go over to a Rebbe and say, what would you answer to somebody who says, you know, why was there a Holocaust or what's the proof of God? Sometimes the answer is, well, what is your answer? Meaning it's always like, what do I tell somebody else? The pshat is we have to have answers ourselves, or at least mahalchim ourselves. It's part of our own growth in Yerushalayim. But professionalization is a wonderful thing. But professionalization does have a downside. Because ultimately, just as the professionalization of medicine, it used to be a doctor treated a person. Now, a doctor treats a machala. A doctor treats a kidney, left ear, right nostril. In fact, sometimes it is said that physicians are so involved and looking at printouts from computers that they push it, don't even see the person. In other words, the old-fashioned doctor used to be able to look at a patient, talk to a patient, and by talking to the person, understood what was going on with that patient. The patient could not describe his symptoms mentally or verbally, but the physician looked at the person. Bisman hazeh, the physician looks at the kidney, looks at the liver, looks at the earlobe, and not even directly at that, but through CAT scans or MRIs or whatever it is. On some level, we have that problem with Kiruv Rechaikim as well. We have become professionalized. We have techniques. We sometimes look at people as entities to be manipulated, to be changed, to be formed. And when they don't quite meet the contours of our production line, they get discarded as we go on to more promising candidates. And that's something that one has to avoid. One has to remember that people, and certainly Yidden, are not objects. They are not notches in our belt to give us an admission ticket to Olam Haba. They are B'Tselem Elokim. They have infinite holiness. They have chashivas. They must be regarded as people in their own right. You know, I saw an advertisement once, although someone told me it actually comes from one of the Achronim, which worries me a little bit, but which described the idea of that when you give tzedakah to an ani, you should look at the ani as a cheftza shel mitzvah, like a pair of tefillin, or a lulav, or an esrog. And that, again, the intent of the advertisement was to emphasize treating someone with respect. But li'anias daiti, it is almost ifcha mistavra. Because to look at a person as a cheftza shel mitzvah essentially is egotistical. Essentially what you're saying is, oh yeah, he's going to be my meal ticket to Olam Haba. Fakert, the Alter of Slobodka used to say that the reason why we don't recite brachas on mitzvahs ben adam lechaveira, why don't I say a bracha on stokah? Why don't I say a bracha on kibud avi? And this is a kasha the Rishayim ask, and they give many, many terutzim. Maybe the ani won't accept the tzedakah, it's a bracha levatel, many, many terutzim. But the Alter of Slobodka used to say that you really shouldn't have the attitude in helping another person, I'm doing it because God commanded me to do it. Now, the Shekhar Jemim says, as a mashmaus, you know, really, I don't want to help you. I don't really care about you that much. But Nebuch, the Eibishter, said, I got to care. So here's the tzedakah. The Alter of Slobodka said, that itself is a bechisus in Kavod Abrios, to say that my motivation is a tzivoy. as opposed to the attitude that this person is worthy, this person is deserving, this person is someone that I should want to help. Fakert, the mitzvahs of chesed, the mitzvahs are not just maisim of mitzvahs. They are mitzvahs to inculcate attitudes and feelings and respect. They are, to use terms borrowed from Aristotle, they are virtue-oriented and not just action-oriented. And one of the problems, quotation marks, that we sometimes face is we reduce people to simple objects which we are supposed to fill up with all of the emes that we have without ever stepping back to see them in their uniqueness, in their individuality, in their godliness. And as a result, in being makarev, we have to be attuned to their individuality, not only in terms of not giving them more than they can take, but in terms of also understanding that there's a two-way street here, that we are also learning from them, that when I encounter a non-religious Jew that is a seeker, that is a mevakesh of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I learn from that person about passion, about mesiras nefesh. I learn from his kashas and his terutzim and his explanations. And it's only in the atmosphere of a shared mutual respect that a person does not feel patronized, a person does not feel looked down upon. And only in that atmosphere can genuine spiritual growth take place. And this is a very, very significant point. Sometimes we think that this person is a gornish, but I'm going to help, I'm going to lift them up, when we have to understand their chashivas as well. And that is the only way. You know, the pasuk says in Mishlei, "Kamayim aponim el ponim, kein leif ha'adam bi'adam," as water reflects the face that stares back at it, so is the heart of one person to another person. And the Vilna Gaon says, it's really the pshat in the pasuk, when I look at the water, if I smile at the water, I get back a smiling face. And if I frown at the water, I get back a frowning face. Whatever I show the water is what I get back. So the heart of a human being will reflect that which you show it. I show another person love and respect. Memela, he will love and respect what it is I want to communicate. I show that person denigration, disdain, condescension, then that is what the person is going to feel towards me. They tell a story about Rav Chaim Volozhiner that one time in a Din Torah, he paskened that all the meat of a certain butcher was treif. It was treif al pi halacha. The butcher asked for a private meeting in the forest. A little suspicious, but Rav Chaim went to meet the butcher. The butcher pulled out his meat cleaver, amazingly enough, and was going to kill. He said, "I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you because you were mafsid my parnasa. I'm going to kill you." So apparently there were some talmidim who were watching from a distance. They were chayshish, there might be something wrong here. And they noticed, I mean, they're horrified. They see the butcher lifting up the knife. And then a second later, the butcher throws the knife on the ground, goes on his knees and cries and sobs and hugs Rav Chaim's legs and is begging for forgiveness. So the Talmidim went to Rav Chaim afterwards and they said, "Rebbe, you're like a Chassidish Rebbe." This was in the years of Chassidim and Misnagdim where it had Machlokas. It says, "You did a Maifas." Rav Chaim says, "It's not a Maifas. I was Makayim Pasuk because I saw that my life was in Sakana. But I knew that Shlomo HaMelech taught us, Kamayim HaPanim El Panim, that if we're misbainain in loving the other person, he will love us." And I realized I really had to think about the value of this person and the fact that even though he was going to kill me, but I tried to have rachmanis for him, I tried to understand him, I tried to put myself in his shoes, and I knew that at the point that I truly reached an ava for him, I knew the ava would be nisabach. Now, two cautionary notes, although they're related. Do not try this yourself. I wouldn't tell you to go to a dangerous place and be samech on it. But, le'idach kisa, the reason why I would not try it myself is because this is not a game. We're not talking about, you know, a fake idea. Oh, make believe I love the person because then I'm going to be safe. It doesn't work that way. But when one reaches a genuine level of Ava, there's going to be receptivity. And this is an important yisayid, because in many, many ways, although Baruch Hashem, in our programs, in our Sameach, in Or LaGola, we of course try to provide the intellectual information that a person needs to address difficult issues in Hashkafa, important issues which are not just for Kiruv Rechaikim, but important to us as Jews, the nature of God, even the evidence that strengthens our emuna, Torah min Hashamayim, evolution, age of the earth, pick your issue. Baruch Hashem, we have people that try to address it and try to give us approaches. But the little secret is that the ultimate thing that will bring a person to Torah is when they sense the love that a Ben Torah has for them, the care that they have for them. That will answer. Because, you know, the truth is, everyone's going to have kashas in Yiddishkeit that maybe we don't have a full answer for. That's the nature. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is infinite and we're finite. We're never going to understand the whole picture. As the Rambam says, to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But as the old Yiddish saying goes, you don't die from a kasha. If one sees that a system overall is good, it gives me kedusha, it gives me simcha, it gives me attachment to something more meaningful, then I can live with this kasha and that kasha and that kasha. It's not going to stare me. Thus, we have the story of the three philosophers in Berlin who were going over all sorts of issues about epistemology, the existence of God, the nature of good. And they had all sorts of tzarechians. And they decided to send a representative to the Volozhiner Yeshiva to spend a year there to have all of his answers on the difficult issues of philosophy, Jewish philosophy. And the person went, and he stayed, he became a Baal Tshuva, he became a one who was learning. He comes back after a year and his colleagues say, "So what's the answer?" He says, "You know, I just don't remember the question anymore. What was the question again?" The pshat is, Torah alone changed him because of his encounter with that which was good, that which was holy. Rav Simcha Zissel of Kelem used to say that the reason Darwin formulated his scientific theory of evolution, that man came from monkey, ape, was because he never met Rav Yisrael Salanter. If he would have met Rav Yisrael Salanter, he would have known only the Ribbono Shel Olam, only God could have made such a person. Such a person couldn't come from an animal. Is that a logical argument? Is that a scientific argument? Does it deal with statistics? Does it deal with the biology and chemistry of life? Not at all. But it creates a whole that is greater than the sum of the parts. By seeing a Kaddish, by seeing a Tohar, by seeing what a person can become, the feeling of the other one is going to be, I want to be that. I want to try to become that. I want to be connected to a system that will enable me not to be on that Madrega, but to enable me to have a connection that way. And that is the awesome achrayus of anyone that wants to be Mashpia, another Yidden. To understand that whether you know the 10 proofs for Torah min Hashamayim or not, if we deal with people with a lack of Derech Eretz, if we don't make the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Misayev, beloved, if we don't see their individuality, if we don't care, then all of your arguments might be very, very wonderful. And perhaps they'll help you in your Avodas Hashem. But they're not going to be a major factor in helping somebody else. And sometimes in the professionalization of our work, we sometimes become like the doctor who treats the kidney but doesn't see the person in front of them. And that's a cautionary note that we need to keep in mind. In fact, again, I apologize just for anecdotes. You say if you don't have points, you tell stories. But the thing is, that Rav Chaim Eiser was the Gadol Hador. In the time of the Chafetz Chaim, Chaim Eisner was considered to be the Gadol Hador, the one who was not only the Paisek Hador, but the Gadol Hador in all Hanhaga of Klal Yisrael in a very, very difficult time. He died at the beginning of World War II, but basically he was the one who enabled all the yeshivas to get into Lithuania and then eventually to Shanghai, the Gadol Hador. He was not a public speaker, by the way. He didn't like to give drushes at all. He did not speak at all, almost any time. And he was not what you would call in the Kirov business. He did not like run discovery seminars or anything like this. But we know of at least one person that he made from. I'm sure there were more. And this was a war correspondent from Cincinnati, Dr. Samuel Schmidt, who was sent from he was a representative of the Joint Distribution Committee. He was also a reporter for a Cincinnati newspaper. And he was coming to Europe to cover the early years before the World War II and right after World War II, after it broke out in 1939. And he was sending regular dispatches, and he was also distributing money to Jewish refugees. And he was a Mechalel Shabbos. He was a Reform person. He was not raised with any Yiddishkeit. And he needed to talk to Rav Chaim Eisner, because Rav Chaim Eisner controlled huge amounts of money, and he needed to talk to Rav Chaim Eisner about where the money should go, etc. And he went to Rav Chaim Eisner, and they were talking business for a while. And then Rav Chaim Eisner put his hands on Samuel Schmidt's hand, and said, "Do you mind if I call you Reb Shmuel?" Which is a title of respect. So Dr. Schmidt was very taken aback. He's talking to this great, great rabbi, and he's a Mechalel Shabbos. He doesn't do anything at all. And he said, "You know, Rebbe, I'm not a Reb. You know, I'm just Dr. Schmidt or Sam. I don't keep Shabbos. I don't keep kosher. I don't do anything." And Rav Chaim Eisner said, "How can you say that a Yid who risks his life to come to a war zone to help other Jews, how can you say that what you do doesn't matter to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't get nachas from you? Do you think that you're not bringing great joy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the service that you've given to the Jewish people and that you are giving to the Jewish people? Do you think you don't deserve to be a Reb? You're a Reb. Reb Shmuel. That's what I want to call you." Dr. Schmidt said that short conversation changed his life. He became a Baal Tshuva. He became a Shomer Shabbos because of that one conversation he had with Rav Chaim Eisner. Rav Chaim Eisner, the Gadol Hador, told me I was worth it. If Rav Chaim Eisner told me that I was a good Jew, and this is a bit paradoxical, nobody changes for the better unless on some level they already feel they're good. If a person feels they're nothing, then where do you get the psychic energy to change? You either feel depressed, you feel hopeless, or you feel, what's the point? The message that one has to communicate is, you're good. And this will be a way that one can become better and one can actualize their potential. This is how Rav Chaim Eisner made a Baal Tshuva. How did the Chafetz Chaim make a Baal Tshuva? We have stories about that as well. And this was an emistic Baal Tshuva, one who was a Shanu Pirish. There was a Bachar in Raden who was a Mechalel Shabbos. Very rare, you would imagine. He had to be kicked out of the yeshiva. And there are two different stories, and I'm not sure if it's the same Bachar or not, because there are two different stories about a Bachar that was Mechalel Shabbos. I'll tell you both of them very briefly. I'm not sure it's the same Bachar. Story number one is, the Chafetz Chaim called him in, spoke to him for around a minute, and the person changed. He became a frum Erlich Yid the rest of his life. And for many, many years, nobody knew what the Chafetz Chaim told him that changed him in 1 minute or 2 minutes. So I remember reading years later, a Rav was giving a drasha talking about motivation and Kirov, and he said, "If only I knew how the Chafetz Chaim could change a person in 1 minute." So an old man got up from the back of the audience. This never happens to me, but he says, "Yes, Ani ha'ish, I am the person. So what did the Chafetz Chaim do? He says, he called me in. I was a 16-year-old. I was much taller than the Chafetz Chaim already. Chafetz Chaim was very, very short. And the Chafetz Chaim took my hands and he looked at me with an infinite sadness in his eyes, and tears fell from his eyes onto my hands, and they felt like burning acid. And he said, Shabbos, Shabbos, Kodesh. And in the Chafetz Chaim's eyes, I saw infinite love for me. And the pain that he felt because I was not walking in the path of Hashem. And I felt I could never be Gairam him that tsar again. And of course, keep in mind, Kal v'chomer ad ein shir, the tsar that we caused the Ribbono shel Olam by our averus. And he says, feeling the love he had for me changed me. It transformed me. It made me realize that I had potential and I could actualize that potential. And I was determined to do it. Now the second story, which again might be the same bacher, or might be a different bacher, is the bacher was kicked out. And as he was leaving, the Chafetz Chaim said, where are you going? So he says, the Rebbe kicked me out. He says, I kicked you out of the yeshiva because, you know, you're a bad hashpa, but that doesn't mean you can't stay in my house and I'll learn with you. And the Chafetz Chaim actually learned with him. He became, now I'm not sure from his perspective, it's not an easy thing to be the Chafetz Chaim's chavrusa. It's a little hard to come late, etc. You know, but nevertheless, this is such an amazing thing. You know, every yeshiva, you know, every Rosh Yeshiva, every Rebbe, you know, we constantly have to grapple with the idea of, you know, caring about the individual versus the hashpa that an individual might have on others. And when do you tell a person to leave, even though that person might not have a place to go, because there'll be a negative on others? I mean, parents have to deal with it sometimes, unfortunately, in kids at risk phenomena. Yeshivas deal with it all the time. And you see from the Chafetz Chaim that it's not supposed to be an either or. You don't sacrifice the yachid because of the tzibur. And you certainly don't sacrifice the tzibur because of the yachid. It's efshir l'kayim shneim. You do what you need to do to protect the tzibur, but you still care about the yachid. And imagine how that kid must have felt then. On one hand, he could have taken it as rejection. He could have taken, I'm nothing, I'm worthless. Who needs a Torah which makes me feel like I'm a nobody? But you have the Gadol and Kadosh and the Tzadik Hador saying, you're not a nobody. You're worth my time. You're worth my investment. You're worth the kaychas I'm going to put in you. Yeah, there might be a problem here. Not ready for prime time or whatever it is. But you're not worthless. You're good. And that's the key to real kiruv rechaikim. Now, as a corollary, this would mean that we have to recognize that even a little bit of progress is worthwhile. That even though we sometimes feel that we didn't make a person totally from, not worth it, let's go on to somebody else. But you have to understand, just like the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, that there's a category of Poshe Yisrael Begufan, who have a special type of Gehenim. And the Girsa in the Gemara is a person who never put on tefillin in his life, meaning even if he put on tefillin one time in his life, he is Yaitzei from a different getter. Again, I know Chabad is controversial, but this at least is one aspect that Chabad is makir, and correctly so, that the person who does even that one mitzvah is a different level. He might become a Ben Olam Haba because of that mitzvah. Mitzvah Geireres mitzvah, to be sure, but even if it's not Geireres mitzvah, the mitzvah alone has a great, great chashivas. There is an old saying that the best is the enemy of the better. Sometimes we think if things aren't going to be 100%, let's not bother. This is not only in Kira, by the way. This is every Ben Torah goes through this. You know, if I'm not gonna learn a whole morning Seder, what's the use? I might as well stop in the beginning. But no, every single mitzvah. The Gra said it by tefillah. The Gra says, if the Yetzer Hara beats you for Slach Lanu and you're not Machaven, you can beat him in Re'ein Avon Yenu. And if he defeats you in Rifa'enu, you come back with Barech Aleinu. You don't give up. In spiritual life, there's going to be a lot of defeats. There's going to be two steps forward and one step back, and sometimes there's going to be one step forward and two steps back. But you keep going. And you're makir that every success is a hatzlacha, and that's true for our avodah. And that's true in the avodah of someone else. And we think, and if we get exasperated, we think about ourselves. How easy is it us to change a single midah? How easy is it for us to change or to improve what we have to improve? So good, Shabbos and Kashrus is not our nisayon, so it's easy for us. But things that are hard for us are hard for us. Things that are hard for him is hard for him. We're no better. We just have a different nisayon in our life at this stage in our lives. So to understand that progress is good. There's a word I heard from my good friend Rav Yisachar Franz. I'm sure many of you have listened to his wonderful shiurim. This he said many, many years ago. I'm not sure if he still repeats it, but it's a wonderful thing. You know, Moshe, we read last week the chait of the Mei Meriva, where Moshe Rabbeinu hits the sela, hits the rock. And all the Rishonim have so many discussions, what was the chait? But the Ramban, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, actually learns that the chait was his anger. He calls them Shimuno Hamayrim, rebellious ones. He's angry. And the Rambam and the Ramban both say that at that moment, it was not proper to have kas, or at least Moshe Rabbeinu, lefi madregasa, he shouldn't have kas. So Rav Franz was Moshe a little shtickle, that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu is so upset here, more than other tainus, is because 40 years ago, right after they left the time, the Yidden were complaining about water and he hit the rock. And they said to him, why did you take us out of Mitzrayim into a desert without water? And now, after Matan Torah, after the Mon, after all the Nisim and Niflais, they're saying, it's a new door, they're saying the same thing. So the mental picture Moshe Rabbeinu has is, I've accomplished nothing. They're exactly where they were 40 years ago. And to a Rebbe, that's very, very devastating. It's like Moshe Rabbeinu has a momentary sense that everything has been worthless. But why is that a mistake? There's a tiny little nafkamina between what they said 40 years before and what they say now. 40 years before, they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, why did you take us out of the desert, lahamis osanu, to kill us? They were accusing Moshe Rabbeinu of wanting to murder them. Now, they didn't say lahamis, they said lamus. You took us into the desert where we can die. We're not accusing you of wanting to kill us, but you took us into a dangerous situation. Thus is progress. There's progress here. It's not the same. They moved a little bit. It's a mashahu, it's imperceptible? Nope. Imperceptible movement. The Chayvus HaLevava says in Ruchnius, there is no such thing that is so insignificant that it doesn't count. It counts. And of course, the Talmud Yerushalmi says, Halvai, quoting, you know, putting these words in Hashem's mouth, Halvai Eisvi Azvu, even if the Jewish people leave me, if they stayed with my Torah, they learn my Torah, the Ma'or Sheba Machsira Lemutif, the light of the Torah itself shall bring them back to me. And that is, a person has a kesher with that, some type of learning. That will be mashpia. So one has to be careful to recognize that progress can be slow. And in fact, pumfakert, it is often the slower, more methodical process, the progress, that will be more successful than sudden transformations. People who try to go to a higher level without going through a certain transitional path are like people who try to build the 100th story of a building without having 99 stories below it. Migdal ha-pireyach bi-avir is not going to be able to have a kiyum. Let me just point out too, just generally, that B'nai Torah do have to realize that kiruv rechaikim doesn't mean that you give up your own learning, your own growth. Again, I'm sure that other Rebbeim said this as well. You know, in Yerideya, we have a saying, Aidi de Triti Lemiflat Leibala, that when something is busy giving out its iser, it's not able to absorb, it's not able to be bileya. Well, this is very much true as well. If one is not involved in replenishing, if one is not involved in growing, if one is not involved in learning, if one is not involved in themselves trying to reach higher madregas and avodas Hashem, they will become stagnant, they will become burnt out, they will become discouraged, and they will become not ineffective in being mashpia other people. Because when I see a person, my Rebbe, when I see my Rebbe, who continues to want to learn and to grow and to steig, then I become inspired that way. If my mashpia himself is no longer a person that is growing, then it's not going to influence me, or it'll influence me in a negative way. So B'nai Torah do need to understand that even if a person leaves the mesgeres of a full-time yeshiva and is involved in kirv in some professional way, it's extremely important that one has a kavias, a starka kavias in learning at a very high level, and in all other ways, continuing to work on their avodas Hashem. You know, you could finish Shas B'Iyun even if you're involved in kirv rechaikim. It doesn't have to be, and it shouldn't be, a stira. One should feed with the other. Be it as it may, I just want to end with one point. In the 1950s, now there is in Israel a kibbutz, Ein Charod, one of the last kibbutzim. It was a Shomer HaTzair kibbutz, very socialist, very, very anti-religious. It was established by children who came from Europe, but they wanted nothing to do with Torah at all. And ad kedei kach, that the kibbutz had a rule that you weren't allowed to have a minyan in the kibbutz, and you weren't allowed to bring in a sefer Torah. That was the rule of the kibbutz. Couldn't have it. One of the parents of one of the members of the kibbutz was a Holocaust survivor from Auschwitz. And his son brought him over to the kibbutz after the war. And the father had a little Sefer Torah that he kept with him for 4 years in the concentration camp. And he managed to hide it. And he brought it into the kibbutz as well. When the kibbutzniks discovered there was a Sefer Torah in the kibbutz, they stormed the person's room. They took the Sefer Torah, which the Nazis had not been able to touch. He took the Sefer Torah. They threw it over the fence of the kibbutz, and it landed in the mud. This was such a meiridika tragedy that even Mariv and Yediot, even the secular papers of Israel at the time, said, this is a little too much. The hatred of Torah, the fact that this was a Torah that survived a concentration camp for 4 years, and coming to Eretz Yisrael, it gets thrown into the mud by other Jews. Mahoya lanu. And Gedolim were geyser atinus. Bizoyan sefer Torah. The Panovich Rav at the time said he felt like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, remember, at the end of Makos, sees the Chorban, sees a fox coming out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And Rabbi Akiva laughs, and the Chachamim were crying, and they asked Rabbi Akiva, why are you laughing? And Rabbi Akiva basically said, because in the nevuas of Chorban, there's the nevuah of Geula. Until I saw the Chorban, literally, I didn't know there was a Geula, but from the Chorban, I understand there's going to be Geula. And they said, Akiva Nechamtanu, Akiva Nechamtanu, you have comforted us. Zakta Panovich Rav, I feel like Rabbi Akiva. What's the pshat? Because the following. If these kibbutzniks didn't care about Torah at all, if Torah was nothing to them, what's the crazy thing? Some guy brings in an ancient book of Egyptian hieroglyphics, they're going to go crazy, they're going to throw it over the fence. L'may nafkamina, have your meshugas. But what's the pshat? They knew in the panemius of their hearts that if a safer Torah would be in the kibbutz even one night, it would change them on some level. They knew it. They felt it, and they had to get rid of it. Abrazakta Panovich Rav, that very tragedy is the greatest hope, because if they're makir the kayach of Torah, then the Torah can change them, and they know it. And that's why negatively they threw it away. But he said it would have been much better. In other words, it would have been worse had they not cared. It wouldn't have been enough gamina. And therefore the Panovich Rav said, from the tragedy, we can get great hope. And so too, even when the Baal Tshuva, not the Baal Tshuva, though, the potential Jew, seems to be hostile, seems to be attacking. You have to understand, people attack only when it's getting to them, only when it's meaning to them, only when it's speaking to them. If it's totally, you know, somebody gives me a schmooze about astrology, I'm not going to get excited over it. I'm not going to attack them logically. I'll say, all right, he has his old mishugas. So the one thing you have to know is, know the kayach, I hate to use this term, the kayach of your product, because I hate to use salesman terms, but they say about the salesman credo is, anything you don't buy, you can't sell. And what we have to be makir is, we have to be makir, the kayach of Torah, the strength of Torah, the transformative power of Torah to make a person close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we believe it, we will be able to convey it.